Here's the final play. Ballard, three-step drop. Pressure comes. Steps up. Hit as he throws. Wobbly ball will fall incomplete. And Texas Tech will survive and escape here today. 16-13. The Red Raiders win it.
Tough day for the KU Jayhawk football team. A lot of adversity to overcome, and they nearly did overcome that with a third-string quarterback, but it wasn't quite enough. Texas Tech with the field goal at the end. The win, we'll go over that and much more coming up on the ticket. Brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Coming up on the ticket, a great day for the Chiefs yesterday, despite not even playing. Will Howard is a new record holder for K-State football. We'll update you on the Big 12 standings. Division II playoffs going to begin this weekend. Couple of schools from MIAA that are still playing. Nebraska blows another chance at being bowl eligible. And how would you like to be bad at your job and get paid $76 million to go away? Yeah, there's a football coach that underwhelmed in his job performance and is going to get paid $76 million to be unemployed. We'll go over that and much more coming up here later on during the ticket. We start local sports, where all of our immediate area football teams have now been eliminated from postseason play, as Osborne losing to Axtell 54-6 on Friday night in eight-man Division II quarterfinals. Bulldogs finished their terrific year at 9-2. Axtell wins their 37th game in a row. There is one Northern Plains League team still alive. Tescott picked up a 52-45 win in five overtimes in six-man action over Waverly. They will face Cunningham in the six-man semifinals on Friday. So here's a look at the state semifinals in six-man. Shylin is at Ashland, Cunningham at Tescott, 8-man Division 2, Axtell at Frankfort, South Central Victoria, 8-man Division 1, Caraparaville at Linden, and Wichita County is at El Saline. Class 1A, Jeff County North will be at St. Mary's Colgan, and Medicine Lodge will be on the road at Conway Springs. Class 2A, Norton beat Ellsworth last week 20-6. They will be at Hoisington. Both teams are undefeated. Hoisington, in a crazy game, beat Southeast Saline 49-42. And Nemaw Central would be at Sabetha. That's just a few miles separate those two schools. Sabetha's only lost to Nemaw Central early in the year, 28-0. Nemaw Central defending 2A state champion, and they are undefeated. So you have three undefeated teams and a one-loss Sabetha team, a loss to Nemaw Central. Rematch in Sabetha. Nemaw Central, Sabetha, Norton, Hoisington, the 2A semifinals. The 3A semifinals, Andale at Cheney, a rematch of a game that Cheney won to break Andale's 57-game winning streak. Topeka Hayden's at Holton. They've had some battles over the years. Back in 03, Holton beat Hayden for the state title. Class 4A, Andover Central's at Wamego. St. Thomas Aquinas is at Tonganoxie, who won 57-50 in the quarterfinals on Friday over Atchison. In 5A, Blue Valley Southwest will be at Mill Valley. Goddard Eisenhower is at Cape and Mount Carmel. And in 6A, Blue Valley at Gardner-Edgerton. Derby, who got by defending champion Manhattan, will be at Washburn Rural. So that's a look at all of the state semifinal matchups in high school football. The Kansas Volleyball Association has released their all-state teams for 2023 in Class 3A. Beloit well represented, as you figured they might be, after a 39-3 season, a state tournament appearance, and knocking off the number one team in the state in pool play in Heritage Christian, their first loss in 26 matches in state competition. Miley Brown and Addison Budke, first team picks. Budke a junior, Miley Brown a senior, who's taken her talent out of Fort Hays State to play D2 volleyball next year. They were first team all-state picks in 3A. Sophia Thompson, a junior, was second team selection all-state. And Brandy Paul Beloit was named the 3A volleyball coach of the year. So congratulations, Coach Paul, for that honor. In Class 2A for Smith Center, Cameron Hutchison selected the first team along with teammate Gracie Kirchhoff. Dakota Kattenberg was honorable mention All-State pick. In 1A Division 2, Carly Brummer of St. John's Tipton, second team All-State. Aubrey Gingler was honorable mention. And in 1A Division 1, Lauren Brubin of Lakeside was picked honorable mention All-State. A full look at the All-State volleyball teams can be found at ncksports.com. North Central Activity Association All-League football teams have been released now that Ellsworth and Southeast Saline were eliminated on Friday. For Beloit, first-team performers, offensive line, Eli Johnson, a junior, was a first-team performer. Jordan Rodriguez, Brendan Anderson of Ellsworth, Nathan Weller, Brody Chambers, Southeast Saline, our first team offensive line. First team quarterback is Southeast Saline's Daniel Kerr. Running back first team, Nathan Friesen of Southeast Saline, Ian Andalon of Ellsworth. Fullback, Loden West of Ellsworth. Receivers, Cole Weber of Ellsworth, Tucker Thaxton, and Cameron Witte of Southeast of Saline. First team, all-league tight end, Maddox Waters, senior of Beloit. Cam Yohe, senior of Sacred Heart, was the all-league kicker. Defensive lineman, Brody Boudreaux, first-team selection as a junior for Beloit. Jordan Rodriguez of Ellsworth, Ryan Parks of Minneapolis, Josiah Monday of Southeast Saline. The all-league punter goes to Will Cravens of Ellsworth and Leon Rowe of Sacred Heart. Linebacker, first-team all-league, Jarek Rexroat, senior of Beloit, along with Loden West of Ellsworth, Grady Gebhardt of Southeast Saline, and all-league defensive back, the Rexroat brothers, all-leaguers on defense. Jarek, the senior at linebacker, and his younger brother, Joel, all-league defensive back, first-team, along with Daxon Liker of Ellsworth. The second-team selections for Beloit, Parker Isbell, offensive line, second-team performer. He's a senior. And honorable mention for Beloit defensive back senior Christian Mears. So those are the selections for Beloit. I gave you all the first teamers. We will post the all-league teams later today at ncksports.com for the North Central Activities Association. So fall sports season winding down, which means winter sports season gets underway today officially with the first day of practice for basketball and wrestling. And then competition will start at the end of this month on the 1st of December for area teams. As the week progresses, we hope to update winter sports schedules at ncksports.com. All right, I'm punching in some numbers here that I can make this work, and for some reason, it's not letting me delete something out of the computer. Try that. There we go. Hey, there we go. Let's try this.
Snap it back to Jack Fox, and Patterson will try to take the Lions to 7-2.
Derwin James is right in the middle.
From 41 yards, the kick is good, and the Lions come to Los Angeles and pick up another big win.
Remember those resurgent Chargers that Mike Tannenbaum was referring to, who beat the pants off the Chicago Bears and the New York Jets? Those resurgent Chargers are just always going to charge. They lose at home on a last-second field goal, 41-38. There were five games that were decided on the final play yesterday in the National Football League. That's the first time that has happened. Pretty impressive stuff. You talk about parity in the National Football League. And it was a good day to be a Kansas City Chief yesterday, and the Chiefs didn't even play. Let's explain all of this. First of all, the Ravens, who were tied for the Chiefs for the number one seed in the AFC West, they lost at home to the Browns. Browns win 33-31. Ravens are 7-3. The Browns are 6-3. The Bengals, who a lot of Chiefs fans think is a major challenger, if the season began today, they wouldn't even be in the playoffs. They're 5-4. They lost at home to the 5-4 Texans with their rookie quarterback CJ Stroud, who's been magnificent. Texans almost blew it, but hit a last-second field goal to win 30-27. The Jaguars are now 6-3 as their five-game winning streak comes to an end. They get blown out at home by the 49ers 34-3. And the Chargers, as I mentioned, losing to the Lions 41-38. So think about this for a second if you're a Chiefs fan. The Ravens were tied with you at the top of the standings. They lose at home. The Bengals, a lot of Chiefs fans worried about the Bengals, and you should be because of the way things have gone the last few years. Great matchups, AFC title game. Bengals won once at Arrowhead. AFC title game last year, it came down to the very wire. The Bengals are 5-4 now with their loss. The Jaguars lose. They're 6-3. Now the Chiefs have a two-game lead over the Jags because the Chiefs have the head-to-head against the Jags. The Chiefs have the head-to-head against the Dolphins. The Dolphins, the Eagles, the Rams, and Chiefs had byes this week. And then, if you ever were concerned about the Chargers, and apparently Mike Tannenbaum thinks the Chiefs should have been last week, and I don't know what he was smoking. But anyway, I'd like to hear what he thinks about the Chargers today. As the Chargers aren't even in second place in the AFC West. They're in third place. They're 4-5. The Raiders are in second place at 5-5 as the Raiders beat the Jets 16-12 on Sunday Night Football. The Bills are 5-4. They host the Broncos, who are 3-5. I must say, if you're a Chiefs fan, you might just want to cheer for the Broncos in that one if you don't want to see the Bills in the playoffs. So the Bills and the Bengals, many people think that's the top two challengers for the Chiefs before the season began. Right now, if the season ended today and the playoffs began tomorrow, the Bills and the Bengals wouldn't even be in the playoffs. And I'm sorry, Chiefs Kingdom, for all you doomsdayer people out there, you negative Nellies in Chiefs Kingdom, you know who you are. You're sitting here whining about all the problems with the Chiefs. You know what? The Bengals and Bills fans would say, hold my beer. You think you have it rough. Oh, boo-hoo. You're 7-2, and you're the number one seed in the AFC, and your offense hasn't even been clicking yet, and you want to whine about this, you want to whine about that. We, by the way, are 5-4, and if the season ended today, we would not be in the playoffs tomorrow, and you're going to whine about being 7-2. Chiefs fans, you are spoiled rotten. And for those of you that can continue, I mean, you have a right to complain all you want, but for you to act like the Chiefs are just so bad in certain areas and that they can't win a Super Bowl with the way they are right now, look around the league, man. Open up your blinders and actually look at the league. This league is wide open. The Chiefs are as good as anybody else in football, despite not being great at wide receiver, despite not scoring tons of points, despite being not good in third and short, despite struggling in the red zone. The Chiefs are one of, if not the best team in football right now, believe it or not. And a big reason is their defense. A big reason is their defense. Yesterday, the early game in Germany, the Colts beat the Patriots 10-6. Mac Jones was pulled before the two-minute drive to end the game. Bailey Zappi, a backup, came in to try to lead him down the field with no timeouts, needing a touchdown. That was a weird situation. So Mac Jones and his future in New England is very uncertain. Bill Belichick, rumors that he may not coach anymore after this year with the Patriots and go somewhere else. That's also interesting. Patriots are 2-8. Colts win 10-6. Colts are right there in the playoff race at 5-5. I mentioned the Ravens lose to the Browns 33-31 on a last-second field goal by the Browns. Texans win at the Bengals last-second field goal 30-27. The Niners all over the Jaguars 34-3. Niners snap a three-game losing streak. The Vikings with Josh Dobbs, who they just picked up a few weeks ago, he looked good, helped my fantasy team, but maybe not quite enough. Vikings win 27-19 over the Saints. The Vikings are red hot, and they're 6-4. The Steelers beat the Packers 23-19. All the Steelers do is find ways to win. They're 6-3. The Buccaneers beat the Titans 20-6. The Cardinals, with Kyler Murray back for the first time this year, they win their second game of the year over the Falcons 25-23. The Lions win over the Chargers. Chargers are 4-5, but how about the Lions now? They're 7-2. Second best record in the NFC, better than the Niners, and right behind the Eagles. Cowboys wallop the Giants 49-17. Giants on the third string quarterback. Seahawks win on a last second field goal 29-26. Niners and Seahawks tied atop the NFC West at 6-3. And as I mentioned, the Raiders beat the Jets 16-12. Broncos and Bills, Monday Night Football tonight. Chiefs will be back in action a week from tonight. Monday Night Football rematch of Super Bowl 57. Chiefs and the Eagles battle the Kelce brothers. That's coming up next Monday night at Arrowhead. Pregame at 6 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. By the way, not only was it a great day and a great weekend for the Kansas City Chiefs, it was a great weekend for others as well. It was a great weekend for Travis Kelce. He was in Argentina on his bye week because, you know what? He can go wherever he wants on his bye week. He had time off. Chiefs fans that are freaking out about, oh my gosh, Kelce might not be ready to play next Monday night. It's a week from now. They had some days off to enjoy themselves. He went to Argentina. I mean, you have the right to go to the grocery store. He has the ability to go to Argentina and watch his girlfriend Taylor Swift do her thing on stage. And Taylor Swift even changed the lyric to one of her songs to mention a Chiefs player, which of course is directed at Travis Kelce. So they seem to be pretty serious. Maybe it's not a big act after all. And there was this big smooch afterwards backstage. And I can't believe I think that's the first time in all the years I've done the sports ticket, I've mentioned the word smooch. But there you have it. So it was a great weekend for the Chiefs, great weekend for Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, apparently. Also wasn't a bad weekend for Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes, with him and his wife, were at a Dallas Mavericks game. And then Patrick Mahomes and Brittany, his wife, they were at the KU game. Of course, Mahomes is a Texas Tech Red Raider, and Mahomes got to watch his Red Raiders beat number 16 KU. KU losing to Texas Tech 16-13 in Lawrence on Saturday. Tech jumped out to a 10-0 lead after the first quarter. And KU quarterback Jason Bean had to leave in the second quarter with a head injury. Red Raiders added a field goal in the third quarter, led 13-0. KU defense kept them in it. And then offense got going. 60-yard touchdown run by Devin Neal made it 13-7. But KU had all kinds of problems, all kinds of problems in the red zone, much like the Chiefs have had here this year at times as well. And they're on a third-string quarterback, it should be noted, with your true freshman Cole Ballard, who is the son of general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Chris Ballard. Chris Ballard used to work in the front office with the Kansas City Chiefs. So they did the best they could. Cole Ballard did the best that he could as well. And unfortunately, it didn't work for KU. KU scored 6 points, a total of 6 points in three red zone trips. Texas Tech was worst in the Big 12 in red zone defense. But KU could not get it done. They had multiple chances to score. They had a fourth and goal in the second quarter at the one. They went for it, did not score, so they lost 3 points there. KU just couldn't finish. They were able to drive the ball at times. Cole Ballard did a pretty decent job. Last drive drives them down. Then they try a little bit of the trick play with Neal, the running back, trying to throw it to Jared Casey, the Plainville, Kansas product. It was not open. It was good defensive play. I don't have a problem with the play call. Some people say, you leave it in the hands of the quarterback. Well, he's a freshman. He's a third-string quarterback. I'm okay with having the ball in Devin Neal's hands. I would rather him run it than throw it. But, you know, 4 yards. I think they were 3 or 4 yards away on a third and goal. And it didn't work out. And then fourth and goal, some people say, you know, why should we kick the field goal earlier in the game to make it 13-10? Well, because that allowed you to tie the game on that field goal 13-13 after the Devin Neal pass that was incomplete. And then and Tech was smart. They called a timeout with about, 30-some seconds left before KU's field goal attempt. And KU, Lance Leipold, I thought, made a tactical error. He was so he was in a hurry. KU had plenty of time there at the end on that drive, and they could have milked more time off the clock. Instead, they called a timeout that I didn't think was really a good idea considering the situation, and they end up leaving some time on the clock, and then Texas Tech goes down the field in 3 plays, 63 yards, and they end up kicking the game-winning field goal, as you heard at the beginning of this show. So it's a bitter pill to swallow for KU because there was an opportunity. Oklahoma State lost this weekend, but KU now is eliminated from the Big 12 championship race. But yet, KU is still 7-3, and you got the big matchup against K-State. Lance Leipold, hey, you can't skip steps in this process. Some people may be already thinking about skipping steps. You're a KU football fan. You're going from, we were bowl eligible last year, to, hey, we're going to be in the top 12 and go to this major bowl game, which was on the table until Saturday's loss.
When success happens, we tend to really, and I think it's understandable, but this place has been starving for it for so long. I don't know if we're quite getting all the steps in line yet. We want to go all the way over to here and start talking about things that aren't even possible yet. And a lot of things. And we've got to make sure that we're A, B, C, D all the way through. We want to go A to D right away sometimes here. We've got to make sure we get there. And that's my responsibility. And today I failed.
So I think Lance Leipold being very honest about, you know, the situation with his football team. I mean, this is a situation where you know, you could easily make excuses, right? And I'm sure some KU fans will make those excuses. It's never good, never good when you're on your third string quarterback. Ask the New York Giants NFL football team right now. They're on a third string quarterback, and that third string quarterback still lives with his mom. That's a true story, by the way. He's a pro quarterback, and he lives with his mom. Saving all that money, I guess. He just needs to ask Jimbo Fisher for a loan. He'll be all right. This is tough for KU fans because this is the second time that KU has... Think about this for a second. KU's lost 2 of their 3 games they've lost. You could argue they lost because of an injury to the quarterback. Now, I don't know if Kansas would have beat Texas with a healthy Jalen Daniels or not, but go back to the Texas game. The Jayhawks were excited. It was going to be the biggest game for KU football in quite some time. They and Texas both ranked. Go to Austin, and Jalen Daniels somehow hurts himself walking in a walkthrough at the hotel, and I still don't understand what's going on with Jalen Daniels. I am mystified. I am confused. I am perplexed. And I don't understand how the guy can dress up and be an emergency quarterback 1 week and then don't travel with the team the next week and then not be ready, suited up to play this week when Jason Bean goes down. I don't understand it. I don't understand it at all. I don't think we're getting all the information that maybe we would like to get about this situation. Maybe that's just me being frustrated because I love to see Jalen Daniels play. He's a Big 12 preseason offensive player of the year. He's played in three games this year. There are rumors that he may be, they might play him one game, pick a game that they pick, pick a game, maybe this weekend against K-State. And then Jalen Daniels, he can still redshirt and keep a year of eligibility. I don't know if that's the case or not. If that is the case, then it's pretty sad because you let your team down. If that's what is, I don't think it's true, but if it is, that's a really horrible precedent to set. So you lose to Texas. Jason Bean didn't even know he was going to start until about an hour before the game. So that threw things off. And KU hung in there. They're down 20-14 in the third quarter, and then it went south. And then you have this game where you got Texas Tech. You're coming off the big win against Oklahoma. Jason Bean with a clutch drive at the end. Jason Bean was fantastic at Iowa State. KU wins at Iowa State for the first time in 15 years. So you're feeling good going to Texas Tech team. And then Jason Bean runs the football, and he has a head injury. And I have been scoffing at this. And notice, if you're a KU fan and you listen to the show on a regular basis, you'll notice that I've never said that KU needs to run Jason Bean more. I have not said that. Kansas doesn't need to. What I've said all along is KU is being very conservative with Jason Bean in regards to what plays they pick for him to run, because they can't afford him to get hurt. Because if Jason Bean gets hurt, you go to a true freshman at quarterback, and that's not an ideal situation. But there are people that don't know stuff about football, that don't know who the next quarterback in line is. And they sit here and say, well, why didn't Jason Bean run the ball more against Oklahoma State? Why didn't Jason Bean run the ball more against Oklahoma? Because Jason Bean is a lanky fellow that doesn't have a lot of meat on his bones. And he's not going to be able to take a lot of shots. And you still take shots when you're playing quarterback when you're not running the ball. People forget that as well. So Kansas has been very selective in when Jason Bean runs the football. And they've usually had him on bootlegs running to the outside to where he could get out of bounds and not take a big hit. Well, he took a hit, and he went down, and then he was out. And KU fans, you want to know why Jason Bean doesn't run it as much as you like? Because of exactly that. It is a good thing that fans are not in charge of football teams, because if Kansas fans were in charge of Kansas football, Jason Bean, first of all, wouldn't even be on this team this year. But if he were, and KU fans were in charge, he would have been hurt probably a quarter in to the first game he started when Jalen Daniels did not play. Well, let's run Jason Bean 20 times. That's not very bright. You've got to understand the personnel that you have. That's why the coaches are paid a lot of money. They know their personnel better than you or me. And I've totally understood that Jason Bean be selective in running the football. And then what do you know? He gets hurt running the football. Now, can you get hurt playing quarterback, dropping back, getting hit from the line side? Yes, but you can enhance your chances of getting your quarterback through the game if you don't run him. That's part of the reason why the Chiefs don't run the quarterback sneak. They are scared to death that some freaky thing's going to happen with Mahomes under center on a quarterback sneak. And they're just saying, listen, we're not going to take the chance. And KU is pretty much, you know, we're just not going to take the chance where we're going to have Bean just run right up the middle and take a big shot or run quarterback draw. We're going to run the naked bootleg. Or we'll have a designed quarterback run out, sprint option to the outside, and Jason's going to pitch it early so he don't take a big shot. Or he's going to run out of bounds and get some yards, turn it upfield, don't take an extra shot, don't try to get extra yards. He's done now. At least he was the other day. Whether he's going to play against K-State Saturday, I do not know. Cole Ballard, to his credit, did a nice job getting him down there. The KU defense had been outstanding. They gave up that big underthrow back shoulder pass that they gave to Oklahoma. They gave Oklahoma a chance to win at the end. So Kansas defense didn't come through on the final possession, but I have a hard time blaming the KU defense when they played really well and held Texas Tech to 16. The offense didn't do much in the red zone. And you can make excuses because you're on your third-string quarterback. That is a legitimate excuse to say you lost the game because you didn't have Jason Bean or Jalen Daniels. Is there anybody out there that would disagree with that? Do you think that if Jason Bean played the whole game, KU was going to lose to Texas Tech? I don't think so. Now, maybe he would have thrown four interceptions. Maybe so. All I know is KU still almost beat Texas Tech with a third-string true freshman quarterback. Should have been going overtime if the clock was managed better, or if they do something in the red zone, they actually win in regulation. That tells you that KU is clearly the better team than Texas Tech. But they didn't win. It's part of football. Injuries are part of football. 16-13, the final. KU eliminated from Big 12 championship opportunities, but they still have a lot to play for, including the big Sunflower Showdown. KU 7-3 overall, 4-3 in the Big 12. Texas Tech 5-5, 4-3 in the Big 12. They keep their bowl hopes still alive. When we return, K-State winning big and getting some help.
Winter is just around the corner, and now is a good time to get your vehicle ready. I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. We offer free antifreeze testing so you can be sure your vehicle is ready for those cold winter mornings ahead. If your antifreeze needs serviced, we have antifreeze flushes on sale this month for $25 off. For fast, friendly auto repair, visit Kiever Brothers just south of the courthouse in Beloit or online at KieferBrothers.com.
Play action, Howard completes it, touchdown Christian Moore, and that's the new all-time record for passing touchdowns in a career for Will Howard.
Will Howard playing well again. He becomes the all-time career touchdown pass leader at K-State. That was his 45th touchdown pass of his career. That one, the Christian Moore, third pass of the day for a score. Number 25, K-State rolling Baylor, 35-13. They led at half. They win going away, 59-25. Howard threw touchdown passes to DJ Giddens and Ben Sennett in the first quarter. Desmond Purnell had a fumble return for a touchdown. Keenan Garber had his first career touchdown on a 45-yard interception return. Howard finished the day with 235 yards passing. Giddens ran for 115. K-State 7-3, same overall record as KU, but the important number for them, they're 5-2, a game better than KU in the Big 12. Baylor falls to 3-7, 2-5 in conference play. Chris Klieman, head coach of the Wildcats, more than happy with the win over Baylor.
A phenomenal performance under a difficult situation, circumstances as far as have a heart-wrenching loss last week and hear the outside noise of what do you have to play for and stuff. And we met with the guys on Monday, talked about we got a lot to play for. We have the opportunity to play for each other. We have an opportunity to play in the Bill and an opportunity to continue to do something pretty special in writing a legacy and finishing the story of the 2023 season. And our guys came to play today. And I don't know if anybody was worried or questioned about our guys came to play.
No question they did. And Will Howard, who some K-State – here's another one. So we talk about KU fans, if they were in charge of their team. If K-State fans were in charge of their team, Will Howard wouldn't have been playing the other day. He wouldn't have played the last four games. Will Howard, the last four games, all he's done is complete 68% of his passes, 880 yards passing, 8.5 yards per pass, 12 touchdowns, one interception. That'll work out pretty well. And now he's the all-time touchdown passing record holder for touchdowns in a career with Kansas State University. Climbing on Howard and his play right now.
He's playing at such a high level right now, and excited for him as he's having a great season. And he and I had a lot of conversations this week, and couldn't be more proud of a guy. He knows how much I love him. He knows how I feel about him. And for him to have that record says an awful lot about what kind of player he is.
Absolutely. He is a leader. He is well-respected. Ben Sennett came out and backed him up after the last game. He just didn't want to hear anybody criticizing a guy that works his butt off, his tail off. Wyatt Thompson, we've had a promo running for 3 or 4 weeks in regards to Will Howard and how he's underrated and underappreciated. And, listen, he didn't play well at Oklahoma State. They lost. When he plays well, they win. I mean, it's pretty simple. When he plays well, they win. And he's played well lately. And I guess he did play well against Texas. They did lose. And honestly, if they just have, they have a better kicking game, they win that game. Will Howard has absolutely performed at a high level here the last four games. And he has responded to criticism. He has responded in a positive way to people doubting him. And that's kind of been his MO his whole career. And Will Howard has won a Big 12 championship as quarterback of the K-State football program. And there's still a chance that K-State has a chance to defend their Big 12 championship. We'll explain that in a moment. K-State at KU, 6 o'clock is the kickoff. 5:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake. Both teams 7-3, but K-State is 5-2 in the Big 12. KU, you should feel very fortunate this game is not in Manhattan. K-State this year, the home games, and granted they haven't played a lot of great teams at home. They beat Southeast Missouri State at home 45-0, beat Troy 42-13, Central Florida 44-31, TCU 41-3, Houston 41-0, and Baylor 59-25. K-State, the lowest amount of points they've scored in a home game, and that counts Big 12 conference home games, is 41 points. So they've been cooking at the bill. Now, the Big 12 football standings look like this. Because Central Florida stunned number 15 Oklahoma State, walloped the Cowboys 45-3 in Orlando. Oklahoma State had won five in a row. They were due for an egg, and that was a big fat one. Number 7 Texas doesn't know how to put teams away. Nearly got snake bitten again, but they get by TCU 29-26. Number 17 Oklahoma, after back-to-back losses, blew out West Virginia 59-20. Cincinnati won at Houston 24-14. Iowa State crushed BYU in Provo 45-13. So here's your Big 12 standings. And if you're a KU fan, you're kicking yourself going, if we could have just had Jason Bean healthy that whole game, we'd be 5-2 right there with K-State in second place in the Big 12. But it hasn't happened. So right now, Texas is in the driver's seat to have a berth in the Big 12 title game. They are 6-1. And then you have four teams tied at 5-2. Oklahoma State's 5-2. Oklahoma's 5-2. K-State's 5-2. Iowa State's 5-2. If there is a three-way tie for a spot in the Big 12 title game, from what I've been hearing, K-State has a lot of those tiebreakers if it's a three-way tie. Now, obviously, K-State lost to Oklahoma State head-to-head. Oklahoma State beat K-State. They beat Oklahoma. They lost to Iowa State. And so you don't have the balanced schedule this year when you added the four football programs in Houston and Central Florida and Cincinnati and BYU. Like in the past, it's pretty simple. You'd be like, okay, well, what's the head-to-head situation? Then we go to the tiebreaker. But that's not the case this year because not everybody plays everybody. Like Oklahoma and K-State don't play during the regular season. So there is a really good chance there could be a three-way tie or a two-way tie for the second spot behind Texas. And K-State is actually sitting in much better position now than they were a week ago. They won. Oklahoma State lost. Nobody really saw that one coming. So it is in Iowa State. K-State still got to play Iowa State. So K-State can take care of Iowa State. They got KU this week on the road and then home to Iowa State on Senior Day. So you feel really good about K-State beating Iowa State. They've owned Kansas for a long time. And if Kansas is playing with a third string freshman quarterback, I don't like KU's chances at home against K-State. Prior to Bean getting hurt, you're probably sitting there as a K-State and a KU fan going, that could be a heck of a game. That could be really tight and close. I don't think it's going to be if KU's on their third-string quarterback. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be an amazing story, and Cole Ballard leads KU to a win over K-State in Lawrence, and it'll be legendary. Maybe Jason Bean will be back healthy. Maybe Jalen Daniels will somehow miraculously be healed and play like a Heisman Trophy candidate Saturday at 6 o'clock against K-State. I don't know. What I do know is Kansas is out of the Big 12 title hunt. It's down to five teams. It's Texas, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, K-State, and Iowa State. And K-State can take care of Iowa State themselves. And then you could be looking at somehow possibly a three-way tie for second between Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and K-State. Only one of those three would get second. Now, if you really want to make things chaotic, Texas loses a game. And all of a sudden, you've got three or four teams tied for first with two losses. Now, we really got to delve into a tiebreaker. So K-State in much better shape today than they were the other day. In the Big Ten, Nebraska saw another chance of bowl eligibility slip away, this time in Lincoln. The Huskers were up 10-7 after three against Maryland. Terps had lost four in a row. They get two field goals in the fourth. One is time expired. They win 13-10. Nebraska was 5-3. They've lost now two in a row. They should have won both games. They are now 5-5. They're 3-4 in the Big Ten. Just when you think Nebraska's taking a step forward, they take two gigantic steps backward. But here's the biggest problem for Nebraska. It's as simple as this. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback. And until they get a quarterback, they will be they'll be average or below average. They've got to find a quarterback. I bet you'd like to have Adrian Martinez now, wouldn't you, Husker fans? You know, all you Husker fans that screamed and yelled and were so mad and got on Adrian Martinez. You know what? He didn't win tons of games for you because he didn't have a great cast around him. And there are times where you had no business being in a game, but Adrian Martinez willed you to have a chance, mainly with his legs. I know he's a better runner than passer. But don't you think Nebraska fans right now would be okay having the dual threat potential and explosiveness of Adrian Martinez? Don't you think Nebraska fans would be like, you know what? You put Adrian Martinez on this football team, we probably beat Maryland. And maybe you beat Michigan State. You might be 7-3 because your schedule ain't that tough. So another disappointing loss for Nebraska, and they got Wisconsin coming up, and Wisconsin had a bad loss to Northwestern. The Big Ten West is just pathetic. Iowa is atop the division, and they won 22-0 over Rutgers. They don't give up points, but they, too, haven't played a great team this year. We stay in the Big Ten, where Michigan, without their head coach suspended by the NCAA for a sign-stealing scheme, which still to me seems odd because there's no proof that Harbaugh was involved on this thing, but whatever. They don't have him on the sideline, no big deal, because James Franklin and Penn State can't win big games against the best teams in the Big Ten like Michigan or Ohio State. Penn State was at home, still couldn't get it done with all the distractions Michigan had around them. Michigan wins 24-15. They stay undefeated. Number five, Washington gets by Utah 35-28. Did you see the pick six by the Washington guy and he drops the ball 2 yards shy of the end zones in celebration? That's got to be up there with one of the dumbest things an athlete's ever done on a football field. Why do we see this? It's like at least once or twice a year. These athletes have to be smart enough to be eligible, right? So how do you not understand that you need to actually get in the end zone before it counts as a touchdown? Didn't you learn that back, I don't know, in peewee football? Why do you think you can't wait half a second to celebrate? I mean, it almost cost Washington the game, and it could have cost them a college playoff football berth and a Pac-12 championship. And the other players around him were clueless as well. They're all celebrating, and Utah smartly goes down, grabs the ball, and recovers it. It would have been hilarious if the Utah guy picked up the ball and ran 98 yards the other way for a touchdown. I would have laughed hysterically. And that kid that did the boneheaded thing deserved to... Listen, I don't want to be too hard on college kids because, you know, they're not pros. But if it's... I'll be hard on a high school kid, and I'll be hard on a college kid. And I'll be hard, obviously, on a pro. When you are going into the end zone ahead of everybody else and you drop the ball yards short of the end zone because you can't wait to celebrate, that, I don't care if it's the first time you played football. You should know that. You need to be in the end zone for it to count. Well, just every year there's somebody that does it. It almost costs Washington dearly. Oregon, number six, beat USC 36-27. Ohio State took care of Michigan State easily 38-3. Georgia all over number nine, Ole Miss, 52-17. Ole Miss, I thought all along, was a pretender. Georgia played their best game of the year. Florida State is undefeated, number four in the country. They beat Miami 27-20. Alabama wins the SEC West, so them and Georgia will meet in the SEC title game. Big shocker there. Alabama's 9-1. They destroy Kentucky 49-21. Number 12, Oregon State all over Stanford 62-17. Number 14, Missouri takes care of number 13, Tennessee, 36-7. Missouri moved up to 11 in the AP poll, I believe it is. LSU beat Florida 52-35. LSU ranked 19th. Their quarterback threw for 350 yards and ran for over 200. That's Heisman type of numbers. Iowa shut out Rutgers 22-0. Arizona, number 21, beat Colorado 34-31 on last-second field goal. Deion Sanders, prime in Colorado. Is it going stale now? They started the year, 3-0? They are 1-6 in their last seven games. They're 4-6, and they will more than likely not be bowl eligible. They got to win their next two games. And I think they still have to play Washington, if I'm correct, but maybe I'm wrong on that. North Carolina, thriller in double overtime, beat Duke 47-45. That's a look at the top 25. The NCAA Division II football championship playoffs are set. Two teams from the MIAA are still playing for a national championship. My Pittsburgh State Gorillas. Yes, I can say that. I'm an alum of Pitt State. The Gorillas are 10-1. They won this past weekend 20-10. They get a host a game in the pit against the University of Indianapolis at 1 o'clock. Pitt State played the University of Indianapolis in round one last year and destroyed them 35-0, so that's a rematch. 1 o'clock from Pittsburgh State University. Central Missouri State, 10-1. They all taking on Henderson State at home, and those games being played this Saturday afternoon. So Central Missouri and Pittsburgh State still alive. Fort Hays State had a decent season. They went 7-4, but, of course, did not make it to the playoffs. You usually have to have one loss, no losses. Maybe you can squeak in with two losses into the Division II playoffs. They actually have a real playoff even still more real than what the college football Division I is going to do next year when they go to 12. It's still more of a playoff. Even when they put in and expand the 12, Division I, Division II still is more of a true playoff than the new format that will go into effect next season. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know that I totally missed the boat. I think, I don't know what you do for a living, but I'm going to say that you, no matter how happy you are in your job, you missed the boat as well. Can you imagine getting hired for a top flight job? Can you imagine not being good at that job? Like, you just don't perform the way you were supposed to perform. You get paid very well while you're employed, but you still fail to deliver what you're supposed to do. So you fail miserably, and your boss decides to fire you. Now, in the real world, you get fired. You might be some kind of severance pay. You got to scramble to find a new job. Maybe you got some money saved up. You can take a little bit of time to find the next opportunity. But ladies and gentlemen, you and me, we missed the boat. We should have really worked hard on working our way up the ladder to be a college football coach. How would you like to suck at your job and still be paid $76 million? I did not stutter. How would you like to be bad at your job or underperforming to where you get fired and yet you still get $76 million to be unemployed? Anybody want to sign up for that one? I've got two hands. If I had six, I'd raise all six hands. Texas A&M fired their head coach Jimbo Fisher yesterday morning, a move that resets the paradigm for coaching buyouts and opens up one of the country's most tantalizing jobs. The move is expected to cost Texas A&M more than $76 million to buy out Jimbo Fisher's deal, which is nearly triple the highest known coaching contract buyouts at a public school. According to the terms of the contract, Texas A&M will owe Jimbo Fisher $19 million within the next 60 days. Let me stop for a second. Wouldn't you be okay with just that? Like, Jimbo Fisher gets $19 million in the next 2 months as part of his contract that he signed, as part of his buyout clause. But the money doesn't stop there. Texas A&M will owe Fisher $19.2 million over the next 60 days. Then they will pay him $7.2 million per year for the next 8 years through 2031. There is no offset or mitigation on those payments. The annual payments start 120 days after termination. So let me explain. Texas A&M will have to pay Jimbo Fisher $19.2 million over the next 2 months. Then Jimbo won't get paid for 2 months, and then he'll get annual payments 4 months after he gets fired. Jimbo Fisher had a record of 45-25 in 6 seasons at Texas A&M, and you may say, well, that's not bad. He won more games than he lost. Yeah, but when he signed with A&M, the coach he replaced actually had a better record in the previous 6 years as Jimbo Fisher had in his 6 seasons. Jimbo Fisher signed a 10-year contract in 2021. He signed a new 10-year contract, even though he hadn't accomplished a lot at that point at A&M. He signed a 10-year contract with $95 million guaranteed just 2 years ago. The deal was given in part because A&M was so worried about losing a mediocre coach to LSU that they said, we got to have this guy. We want to make sure he doesn't leave. So we're going to back up the Brinks truck and give him all the money anybody would need. The firing comes in the wake of Texas A&M. They did win on Saturday against Mississippi State 51-10. But sources have said Fisher's fate was already decided before the game. A&M is 6-4. That's not good enough. A&M pays lots of money for their players. If you're an A&M fan, you're going to disagree with that. A&M, for all the money you're paying your coach and all the money they put in that university, 6-4, I mean, just to put this in perspective, Kansas and K-State have better records than Texas A&M, and Chris Klieman and Lance Leipold aren't getting even close to the money Jimbo Fisher's getting. Here's a number, and listen to this, folks. You like numbers? How about $20,000? Does $20,000 sound like a decent amount of change? Now, it's not very good for a full-time salary, obviously, but $20,000, that's what Jimbo Fisher made for his first paid coaching job. In 1991, he was offensive coordinator at Samford, and he got paid $20,000. So that's not much, is it, for a full year of coaching? Why do I bring that number up? In 1991, Jimbo Fisher made $20,000 a year as offensive coordinator at Samford. Jimbo Fisher now will get paid $26,301 per day over the next 8 years by Texas A&M not to coach. Ladies and gentlemen, how would you like to be fired from a job that you were not very good at, and they say, you know what, we're going to fire you today, and you're like, well, I know my buyout. I'm definitely not a loser. Now I don't need the stress of dealing with the media. I don't have to answer anybody's questions. I don't have to deal with you yahoos that think that you're good at telling me what to do in my job. I'm getting $76 million, and you've got to pay it. Oh, by the way, I get $26,301 every day for the next 8 years not to work because I wasn't good at my job. Oh, dear Lord, it's good to live in America, isn't it? It's good to be Jimbo Fisher. Don't cry for the guy because he got fired. He got fired might be the best thing ever happened to the man. That guy is going to get paid $26,301 every day over the next 8 years. Take 8 years times 365 days. That's what? Over 2,500 days? For the next 2,500... Ladies and gentlemen, how would you like to get paid $26,000 every day for the next 8 years? To do nothing! I see your hands. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. And I'm sitting there thinking, what could have A&M done with that money that could have been a little bit better? I don't know. They could have built some better facilities. They could have maybe set up some mental health stuff on campus for college students. They could do stuff for the science and arts. They could do stuff for the music department. They could donate some of the money to help homelessness. They could help donate some money for cancer research. Instead, they decided to give a whole bunch of money to a guy, guarantee it to him, and he hadn't even done really a ton. I mean, he was a decent, good coach at Florida State, okay? Did they win a title 1 year with him? I don't know. But he hadn't really done anything special at Texas A&M when they gave him his new 10-year contract worth $95 million guaranteed just 2 years ago. And now they're going to blow all this money on Jimbo Fisher, and then they're going to go and somehow they're going to get a whole bunch of money, and they're going to back up the truck to somebody else to come in and be their head coach. But remember, there's no money in college athletics. Just remember, these poor college institutions are poor. They're a public university, by the way. Now, where exactly all the money comes from, I would imagine it's a lot of donors, big-time spenders. Everything's bigger in Texas, so even the wallets are bigger, the checkbook's bigger, the credit cards are bigger, the bank accounts are bigger. The pens are even bigger that sign the checks, because Texas is just bigger. Well, they might be bigger, but Jimbo Fisher's going to have a bigger payday coming ahead. $26,000. No. $26,301 every day for the next 8 years. Not to coach. That's how good and bad he is. He's so good that he got the big contract. He's so bad he got fired before he finished the contract. And for the next 8 years, he's going to be paid not to coach. And here's the thing. He'll probably still get a job somewhere else to coach somewhere else. And he'll probably get a double dip and make even more money, which he don't need to. That guy should retire. He should enjoy life. He should maybe donate some of that money because he doesn't deserve all of it. And he could be a broadcaster and get paid. He could just drink the Mai Tais and the margaritas and the Coronas on the beach or whatever the case may be. But ladies and gentlemen, the person that's got to be enjoying life the most of anybody right now is Jimbo Fisher. You just took away all the stress of my life. You fired me. Holy cow. You did me one unbelievable favor. I love the coach, but dear Lord, you're going to pay me not to coach. That's okay. That's going to add some life expectancy to my life, and I can spend more time with my grandkids and my kids and my family. $76 million he's going to get to not coach. There's something wrong with college athletics when that happens. There's something wrong when you don't perform and you get rewarded like that. And I'm telling you, I've said this every single time there's a buyout in college athletics. Whoever signed or created the first buyout clause in a coaching contract is brilliant. And also, it's sickening that they came up with it. It's great for coaches. I still think universities should actually get together and say, that's it. Let's just go ahead. Nobody give out buyout clauses anymore. No buyout clauses. But you won't, because the other one of those universities will backstab the other, go after their head coach. And if there's no buyout clause, then they get to steal your coach for nothing. So the buyout clause is basically in there. Like if somebody wants to go get Lance Leipold, if somebody wants to get Matt Rhule, somebody wants to go get Chris Klieman, there is a buyout clause, all right? So let's say Michigan State wants Lance Leipold, that's a rumor out there, then they've got to take care of the buyout in Lance Leipold's contract. There's a buyout in Bill Self's contract, Jerome Tang's contract. About every coach has a buyout clause. And that's to protect the university if they lose a coach to some other school. But when it doesn't go well and nobody is actually coming after your coach to take your coach away, you're the one that has to pay the guy if you don't want him employed anymore. Dear Lord. All right, in college hoops, number one, KU rolled to a 99-61 win over Manhattan on Friday night at Allen Fieldhouse, behind 18 points, 8 rebounds by Hunter Dickinson. KU will face number 14, Kentucky, in the State Farm Champions Classic around 8:30 tomorrow night in Chicago. We'll have pregame on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas, at 8 o'clock tomorrow. K-State men moved to 1-1 as they beat Bellarmine 83-75 in Manhattan Friday night. Tyler Perry hit 4 threes, 18 points. Cam Carter at 17 in the win. K-State back at home tonight as they host one and one, South Dakota State at 7 o'clock on ESPN2. In the American Athletic Conference, Wichita State moved to 3-0 with a 95-65 win over Friends. In women's hoops, K-State rolled to a 77-39 win at Little Rock on Saturday behind a 32-point, 10-rebound double-double from Ayoka Lee. Yep, she's back, but somehow not one of the top 25 women's basketball players in the country. That is still mind-boggling. But that's somebody that didn't know anything about basketball putting that list together. The Wildcats led 46-16 at halftime. They're 2-0. KU women on the season are 1-0. They'll host 2-0 Penn State at 5 o'clock tonight on the Big Ten Network. And we close here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We close with a couple of things here. First of all, just to piggyback on what I said a moment ago, Jimbo Fisher's buyout is $76 million guaranteed. The previous record buyout paid to a college coach was $21.5 million. So we're in a whole different level. By the way, here's Jimbo Fisher. Here's what he accomplished at Texas A&M. You ready? Jimbo Fisher era at A&M is over. No national titles, no conference titles, no division titles, no 10-win seasons, zero wins against ranked opponents on the road, zero ranked finishes in the last four seasons, a worse record than his predecessor who he came in that they had fired, Kevin Sumlin, and he's going to get $117.5 guaranteed dollars over the course of his contract where he's already been paid and with his buyout, and he accomplished jack squat. It's great to be an American if you're Jimbo Fisher. No question about that. One other nugget. All the teams in the NFC with winning records, not a single one has a strength of schedule better than 500. Interesting. And we end with this. He's my favorite NBA player. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know how much I love James Harden. James Harden is the consummate team player. I mean, that's a guy that will jump from team to team because he cares so much about teams that he wants to bless every team with his presence. James Harden is what's wrong with professional athletes today. James Harden is the poster child for why you shouldn't get all caught up in maybe just one player in the NBA. James Harden is a cancer. Wherever he goes, his teams, the teams get worse or they have all kinds of problems. And I said it when James Harden went from Houston to the Nets, I didn't think it was going to work. And then he bailed after 1 year because they had injuries, and James Harden, he forced his way out of Houston, forced his way out of Brooklyn, and then he goes to the Sixers, and he forces his way out of the Sixers. And as we said all along, Daryl Morey is not an idiot. He knows Harden is declining as a player. And I'm amazed at how many national TV people act like this guy is an unbelievable player, because he's not anymore. He has flashes. He hasn't won anything at the NBA level. He was riding the coattails of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook in OKC when he was a young player who understood he wasn't the I in team. And he was a sixth man, and he was really good at that role. And then he went to Houston, became a star, and then became bigger than the team in everything he does, everywhere he goes. And so all these national people talking about how James Harden was so great, he led the league in assists last year. Yeah, okay, that's great. He understood, I can't drive and fly by people anymore. He carries the ball almost every single time he dribbles. Every time he does a step back three, he travels. He's allowed to do it. The NBA has been an enabler for James Harden. James Harden is not a guy you want to watch and emulate if you're a young basketball player. He is the things he does, you just need to actually say, "That's I want to do the opposite." And especially when it comes to his attitude and the way he handles himself. James Harden, I was sitting there going, the Sixers, this is great. The Sixers have him where he's got to play with the Sixers or he's just going to have to sit out and not play. And guess what? That'll be in the end of his career. And somehow the Clippers were dumb enough to still, for some reason, really want the guy. Now maybe James Harden's going to turn it around and the Clippers are going to win NBA title. I highly doubt it. But have you been paying attention to what's happening with James Harden? So James Harden went to the LA Clippers. He played for the 76ers last year. He played with the MVP. So he had a star on his team, so he didn't have to carry the whole load. When the Clippers landed James Harden, James Harden said, "I'm not a system player. I am a system." Wow. That sounds like team ball, doesn't it? Boy, that guy's all in to win championships. I'd love to play with a guy like that. "I'm not a system player. I am a system." Okay. You mean we, your four teammates on the floor with you, are not part of that system? All right, got it. So James Harden went from the 76ers to the LA Clippers. And since James Harden has been with the LA Clippers, they have lost every game. They are 0-4. Last night, James Harden, in 29 minutes, shot 4 of 12 for 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists. And now listen to this. And this is why I don't understand all these supposedly smart people in upper-level management acquiring players have all the numbers at their fingertips on a computer. Trust me. In the 29 minutes that James Harden was on the floor last night, for the Clippers against the Grizzlies, who are not good right now, the Clippers were outscored by 28 points. They were outscored a point per minute every time Harden played. Get this. When Harden was on the bench for 19 minutes, the Clippers outscored the Grizzlies by 24. If that doesn't tell you you're better without Harden than with him, I don't know what will. Through four games with the Clippers, when Harden has been on the floor, the Clippers have been outscored by 67 points. When James Harden has been on the bench during those four games, the Clippers have outscored their opponents by 85 points. Why in the hell is he on the floor? If your job is to win games, that guy is making you worse. Now, I know he's on the floor because you traded for him, which was stupid in the first place. And James Harden, he is a system. He's a system of destroying teams. That's his system. He's averaging 9 shots in 31 minutes per game. Quite the system. He is not a good defensive player, never has been a good defensive player. So if he's not scoring points or making your team better on offense, he is an absolutely extreme liability. And by the way, the team that he just got traded from, It is addition by subtraction. Wherever James Harden goes or leaves, it's addition by subtraction. The 76ers, when the Nets got rid of Harden, they got better. Believe it or not, they did. The Rockets didn't. I mean, exception, because they were tanking to try to get draft picks. So he goes to the Sixers. He leaves the Sixers in a trade. The 76ers without James Harden are the number one team in the Eastern Conference. They have the best record in the NBA. They are 8-1. They've won 8 in a row. They won yesterday against the Indiana Pacers. Tyrese Maxey, now that James Harden isn't dribbling the ball for 23 seconds out of a 24-second shot clock, Tyrese Maxey actually gets the ball. He scored 50. Joel Embiid had 37. And Embiid, after the game, says, "We're just really doing a good job of playing well together." Huh! Wonder who that shot's at. So let me get this right. James Harden goes to the Clippers. They get worse. Stats bear it out. They're 0-4 with him. The Sixers get rid of James Harden. Addition by subtraction, they've won 8 in a row. That is not a coincidence. Not a coincidence one single bit. Now, for a great way to close out the show, if you want to hear somebody absolutely shred a narrative, listen to this guy, Brian Damaris. He is a guy on Bally Sports that is on the Dallas Maverick broadcasting crew. Here's what he had to say about James Harden. I could not say it any better than myself or him.
Ask the producer to pipe this into the Clippers locker room so I can talk to you, James. I hope you're taking notes. I'm telling you in advance, you're welcome for the wisdom I'm about to spew. Because, listen, I get on my knees every night and pray for someone to believe in me like Daryl Morey believed in you. You wanted a certain coach, they brought in Mike D'Antoni. You want to play a certain style, they played it. You wanted Dwight Howard, they brought him in and got rid of him when you were tired of him. You wanted Chris Paul, they brought him in and got rid of him when you were tired of him. They brought in your old friend Russell Westbrook. You want to go to Vegas on off days? They looked away. You wanted the team to stay over so you could go out at night? They changed the schedule, and it didn't work. And you know what? You said, I'm going to break up with my whoopee. Not good enough. I see the bright lights in New York. I want to go there. My old pal, Kevin Durant. It's going to work. The big three. And all after 1 year, you want it out. You realize, oh my gosh, I took this guy for granted. The guy that believed in me. I went back with Daryl Morey. They traded Ben Simmons for you. How did they pull that off? And you know what? You went there and you got a partner who got the MVP. He won the MVP. And what did you say afterwards? You said, they didn't hand me the reins. You're the point guard. You're holding the reins. And what did you do when you had the reins? You scored 9 points in Game 7 against Boston. You blew a 3-2 series lead. So they fired their coach. Not good enough. You broke up with the guy believing you again. You said, the bright lights of L.A., that's where I want to go. Let's see if that works. Listen, James, have you ever had those friends who had bad roommates? Over and over, they complained about their bad roommates. This guy's terrible. The bad roommate here. They never thought to be self-aware enough that they're the bad roommate. They're the problem. Hey, James, you're the problem. If this doesn't work this year in this system with this team, then you're going to go and point fingers at everybody else, and you're going to go back home, and you're going to start swiping right for another team, and there's not going to be anybody left. Because, James, you're not the beard. You're not the system. You're the problem.
Bingo. That man deserves a raise. Perhaps Jimbo Fisher can kick an extra million or two to his bank account. Brian Damaris nailed it. You're not the beard. You're not the system. You the problem. This has been the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Enjoy the rest of your day here on Monday, November the 13th.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.